listening to Patty Pigskin with Gary Somerville.
Well, hello there. I'm Gary Somerville. Welcome back to Patty Pigskin. This is episode 3. And yes, I am from Ireland, and most of us, unless you're from somewhere posh in Dublin like D4, we don't really pronounce our H's, so you're going to hear a lot of turds and trees and things, and my American buddies make fun of me about it all the time. So the draft, the dust may have settled on the 2017 draft, but shit doesn't stop rolling here at Patty Pigskin. So have a really good show for you today. Fantastic guest. He's actually my first American guest on the show. His name is Mr. Brian Carter. I know Brian a couple of years now. He used to live in Dublin, and we played football together for the Dublin Rebels. He is a Seattle, Washington native. He actually has moved back to the US now. He's living in Seattle with his family, and he is on the coaching staff of the Richmond High School Mustangs. Really cool guy, loves football, knows it inside out as both a player and a coach, played at various different levels throughout his career, including arena football and semi-pro, and a little bit of pub league with the Dublin Rebels. And he's a huge Seattle Seahawks fan. He has a season ticket, and I enjoy seeing his customary selfies that he takes for every home game with his dad. So really happy to have him on the show. And because I'm getting a little bit better at this kind of stuff, and this is episode 3, and I have a Seattle man as my guest, this episode is going to be for Russell Wilson. So Wilson was kind of a sleeper pick, really, in 2012 out of Wisconsin after 3 years at North Carolina State. A little bit undersized for a QB, to say the least. He was about 5'10" when he came out of college. And the Seahawks took him in this third round with the 75th pick. And the Seahawks fans weren't really mad on this, as they had just signed Matt Flynn for $20 million for 3 years. So they felt they didn't really need another quarterback. But lo and behold, Wilson won the job in training camp. And in his rookie year, he was named the starter. As a result, he's gone on to 2 Super Bowls with the Seahawks. The first one, they beat the highly favoured Broncos in Super Bowl 48, led by Peyton Manning. That was a bit of a whitewash. And probably more noticeably, in the second Super Bowl of his career, Super Bowl 50, 2 years ago, they lost in dramatic circumstances to the New England Patriots, and pretty much made Malcolm Butler famous in one play by throwing that quick slant a little bit too far inside, and that was picked off. So not a bad start to his career. So yeah, as I'm going a little bit modern age with the jersey numbers at the moment, and I have a Seattle guy on today's show, Russell Wilson, number 3, this episode is for you. So without further ado, I'm going to get my buddy Brian Carter, aka BC, on today's show. Enjoy. So Brian Carter, thanks very much for coming on the show.
Thanks, G-Money.
It's been a while since we've actually spoken in person, or even on the phone or whatever. I couldn't even remember how your voice sounded. So in a non-creepy way, it's good to hear your voice serenade me again.
Do I have that Irish accent still?
There's a little bit of a twang. I'm sure it's going to come out the more you talk to me, so hopefully I can pull it out of you a little bit. So just before we start, some fresh news off the press that I just saw on social media there. So the USA Football is no longer recognized as a governing body of American football in the US, and this is a result of some anti-doping violations that seem to be ongoing. So there seems to be a bit of a doping problem in the amateur football ranks in the US. So I know in Ireland now, the Irish American Football Federation is actually part of the Irish Sports Council. So technically, players can get tested throughout the season, even though I haven't heard of it actually happening. So is this something, you know, this is obviously fresh news. Is this something that you heard throughout your football career? Was there like an underlying drug issue in amateur football, or is this kind of, as the game evolves, this is new to the game?
You know, as the game evolves, it's just like anything in life. People are always going to try to find a shortcut around anything. It's the way it is in sports forever, right? I mean,
yeah,
steroids has been around forever, and you know, people are trying to get bigger, faster, and stronger, and they know sometimes that one meal ticket, it's going to be worth their chance of, you know, doing that and potentially having a career. It's sad to hear that, though, because, You know, I mean, that's like an American sport right there, football, like gridiron football, right? So
a little bit more information about it, just reading into it here. USA Football also did not allow a US ADA testing officer who was assigned to carry out an out-of-competition test to access the practice camp of USA Football Junior National Team. So it just looks like USA Football were straight up not allowing guys to come in and test our players out of competition. So definitely raises some red flags there and suspicions, which is sad to hear, because this appears to be happening at a junior level. You know, these are kids, so you know it's probably somebody inflicting this kind of stuff on them and not really their own choices.
Well, I mean, that's just one of those things, right? Kind of like I was saying, you know, it's, hey, do you want to be part of this program? If you do, then you got to take this. And it's one of those things, like on a resume, right? So they can put it on their resume. So it's, you know, it's sad to hear, because it sounds like they're putting potential kids in a corner to, you know, booster, you know, a program that does not need that in any way, shape or form.
Yeah.
Not that no sport needs that, to be honest with you. So,
and especially it's USA football. So these kids are playing all over the world against, you know, countries that haven't got such a really good football program. You know, they don't need to be giving these drugs to these type of kids. They're already the best on the planet, probably for their age group. You know, they're playing guys from all over the world that have only probably taken up football the last few years. I don't really think they need to be doing that kind of stuff. So it is sad to hear.
It is sad, because, I mean, it's just like any other sport nowadays. It's 24/7, you know, 365, every day of the year. They're eating and breathing whatever sport it is, because they want to be, you know, a professional athlete someday, where, you know, they can make $1 million or something, you know, put their have a good fortune for their family for the rest of their life.
And
it's just, that's super sad to hear. So,
all right.
But it is what it is.
It is what it is. Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll get away from a bit of the bad news. And this is Paddy Pigskin here. We're breaking fresh news off the press here. You know, we're up here with NFL Network or ESPN here. The big stories.
That's sweet.
Okay. So we'll get back to you a little bit. A lot of the guys, you know, in the Irish American football family back home in Ireland would have played with you, or played against you, or just know you from around the league as one of the few American exports we get over. So tell us a little bit, I alluded to it earlier on in the introduction, but tell us a little bit about your football career that's taken you up to this point.
Just real quick, just, you know, like probably every other American out here, you know, that loves football, they started either in junior high or in middle school. I started in junior high, played in high school, went on to college, played some college ball, and then got a chance to play a year of arena football, which was a hoot. Some good stories from there for sure.
I can imagine. And so were you in Western, was it Western Washington University? Is that correct?
Central Washington, yeah. Siwoo! yeah, so I was out there. And then after the arena, played some semi-pro ball for a couple different teams. And then my wife and I decided to move to Ireland, and I finished up my career out there with the Dublin Rebels.
So did you rock the number 12 the whole way through? So, you know, you're like the second most famous ever number 12 next to Tom Brady. So
I'd hope I'd be the most famous Dublin Rebel, but
you're definitely, you're definitely down in the legendary column. So did you wear number 12 all through? Was it, because it seemed to be your number? From as far as I was aware, you always like to wear number 12.
Yeah, you know, it was kind of a later career kind of change in number. I started out wearing number 21 off of Desmond Howard.
Yeah.
A Michigan receiver that I idolized at the time. And then it went on to number 2 with Deion Sanders. And
never heard of him.
And then he's just some guy. some fast guy. Had an okay career in the NFL.
Yeah, he was all right, yeah.
More like slow time, not prime time.
Exactly, yeah.
And then after that, you know, kind of I didn't really pick numbers, they just kind of picked me, and then I just kind of fell on to number 12 one day, and it kind of suited me just because I'm a big Hawks fan. So
fair enough. All right, so you moved over to Ireland, as you do, just on a whim. You're just like, hell, let's just move over to Ireland and see what's happening. So you and your wife moved over here. So how did you, so you know, we haven't got tons of American imports that play in the American leagues, in the Irish leagues, but most of them probably find out about a team, you know, through a work colleague or maybe Google or something like that. So how did you come across the Dublin Rebels when you came to Ireland?
Yeah, good old Google, you know. I knew that the, you know, European leagues existed and whatnot. I knew they were big in Germany and in France and Italy and Austria and Germany. Did I already say Germany? Maybe I did.
Yeah.
But anyways,
Germany would be the biggest, yeah, because a couple of our buddies, as you know, Dara Farrell and Ross McCooey and Steve Walsh, all Rebels players, they all played in Germany. And some of those guys probably would have played in NFL Europe, some of the German guys. So it's a pretty big deal over in Germany, at least.
Oh, for sure, for sure. I mean, there's no joke. Those German teams could seriously compete against, you know, U.S. college teams, I definitely think. Because, I mean, it's just like what we're kind of talking about earlier as far as, you know, when people put their mind to it and they put their heart and soul into it 24/7, 365, they're going to be damn good at it. So,
They're big boys in Germany as well. They have that German machine mentality going on over there.
They certainly do. They do.
So you landed in Ireland. You went on
landed in Ireland, just Googled, and you know, just Googled American football in Ireland, and sure enough, the Dublin Rebels popped up, and I knew I was going to be in Dublin. And actually, my first game was with what was the team? I want to say it was the Dublin Dragons.
Yeah, they are now they are now the South Dublin Panthers, but a lot of the guys still remain from the Dublin Dragons. Yeah, they were based out in Lucan at the time, probably when you played them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was just for a charity game. It was at the end of the year, I think, or we were going up to play Carrick and Fergus, the Knights.
Yeah.
And I just showed up for a couple practices, and they let me play in the game. I had a blast. And but then I kind of just had my sights on the Dublin Rebels, and just what a great organization that they've had over the years in the Irish American Football League. So.
Yeah, they're definitely one of the well-run organizations in the IFL. So. What was your first impression when you showed up for that first practice or that first game with the Dublin Rebels compared to, you know, half of the guys are probably drunk, were they? Or they were probably still drinking on the sidelines, who knows?
They weren't Gatorade bottles. They weren't Gatorade bottles. They were actually Guinness bottles. You know, sounds Guinness plastic bottles. So,
you showed up and were you like, what have I got myself into here? Or were you actually impressed at the start?
I was impressed at the start because they were showing a lot of technical drills for all the rookies and whatnot.
Yeah.
Super technical, but simple technique drills. And, I don't think a lot of the, coaches at the time, knew who I was or they had met me and, kind of knew my experience and whatnot. So they kind of had me going through drills and they're trying to correct me. And, I wanted to recorrect them, but I went with the flow because you know, that's what you do, you respect your coaches. And then afterwards, you know, they kind of found out, you know, my experience and whatnot. But it was just for a quick plug, if anybody's not read the book Playing for Pizza, it's a John Grisham book.
All right.
It's about an NFL football player that goes over and plays football in Italy. That book basically sums up my experience in Dublin for playing American football there. And it's not a bad, and it's not in a bad way, any shape or form. It's just how different, you know, the sport is taken over there. And that's not in a bad way at all. So
I'm not a big book fan, but I probably will check it out. If it equates to what your experiences were like when you first moved over, I'll have to check it out. And you bring up a good point, you know, American football in Ireland, it's still a minority sport. So like me for an example, you know, growing up and playing different sports, you were kind of pushed into football or soccer, whatever side of the pond you're on, you're going to refer to football or soccer and Gaelic games. So for any American listeners, Ireland has their own native sports. One is Gaelic football, which is like a mixture of soccer and rugby. The other, which is vicious, it's like violent chess with sticks. It's called hurling, and that's like a mixture of field hockey and lacrosse. So when you grow up in Ireland, the chances are you're probably going to be playing one of those sports. So Brian, when you moved to Ireland, you were probably playing with, you know, guys that were, I would say, late 20s or 30s who probably played those sports, you know, growing up and into their adolescence and early adulthood, and then just said, you know what, I'm into a bit of a change, and then took up football, whether they watched it or they played Madden or whatever. So you're probably playing with guys a little bit older, you know, starting the sport as you would be used to, right?
Oh, for sure, for sure. But that being said, it's amazing how quickly some of the players that I played with that were rookies picked it up so quickly. And that's a testament to just athletes around the world, right?
Sure, yeah.
You could give a soccer player, or you could go back to like what you're saying with the Gaelic sports.
Yeah.
You could give them just a little bit of time and, you know, with a little commitment and, you know, some good patience, they can turn into real good football players. And
absolutely,
that's what I've dealt with when I went to the Dublin Rebels. I mean, there were some guys that were on the team that were just beasts. I mean, that could probably play some ball here in the States and play really well.
Yeah. I think a winning combination is if you're coachable. So, you know, you have to be open to coaching and constructive feedback and criticism and stuff like that. If you're able to combine that with the raw athletic tools that you may have from another sport, absolutely, yeah, I think that you can turn into a really good football player in a short amount of time.
Oh, yeah. And you know, the great thing about the Dublin Rebels, too, not that the other teams don't have it in Ireland, but they have some really good coaches. And when you have good coaches, that's what brings you those Shamrock Bowls, all that the Dublin Rebels have collected over the years.
Yeah, that's eight. They've collected eight, just for anybody that's forgotten how many titles they've won. They've had eight Shamrock Bowls so far.
And Gary, you've got two rings, right?
I have, yeah. I won my first two seasons with the Rebels. So my rookie season, I remember showing up to my first training camp, which was for rookies only. I remember it like it was yesterday. It was out in Sportslink by the airport. And you may remember now when I bring this story up, but we had to do a couple of combine drills. And I remember some American dude that had his arm in a sling and a big duffel coat and a beard and like a Russian winter hat just strolls along and starts talking shit at all the rookies. I'm like, who the hell is this fella? And then turns out I got told who you were and your experience. I was like, all right, I'm gonna listen to this guy, and he starts talking shit. So yeah, I'm glad I listened to the constructive feedback you gave me that day.
Well, to all your listeners out there, Gary is one of those people I'm talking about who on day one, I saw him, you know, do some football drills, and you can just instantly see that he could pick it up just like that. And that's the wonderful thing about Gary and how he's, you know, grown as a football player, is to what he just said as well, as being coachable and listening, you know, to people that have done it before. And there's always the light to watch you play and play with you. So
thanks very much. And just to add to that, an interesting point I always bring up when I'm talking about this kind of stuff is Conor McGregor's coach, John Kavanagh. He has this phrase where he's talking about, you know, you can have the hardware and it's just about updating the software. And I find, you know, the hardware for me personally would have been, you know, having speed from, you know, my sprinting days in school and playing a bit of Gaelic football, having the ability to catch a football. And then you just got to update the software. So in the case of American football, your software is, you know, running routes or your timing with the quarterback and stuff like that. And once you're able to update that software to a new sport, I think you're definitely on the road to success.
Ah, I love that. I've never heard that from Kavanagh and their camp. That's so awesome.
Well, there you go. Yeah. You check out his book. I've been reading it. It's called Win or Learn. So if you ever hear this show and you get loads more people buying your book, I want a cut of that money if you don't mind. Thanks very much. So we might as well move on to, so we also played a bit of soccer together actually in Ireland. We played for Palmerstown Rangers. So they're an amateur soccer team in my hometown of Palmerstown in Dublin. You played with us for, was it a year or two you played for Rangers?
It was about a year and a half.
Okay, so that was good. As you saw for yourself, it was like, not that it wasn't that serious. Guys would be showing up hammered still from the night before, or they'd probably be
we're on a theme with Ireland.
Yeah.
Hammered before games.
I have to sell the stereotype a little bit, you know. We have a stereotype for a reason. So do you feel we spoke about this during the week actually, do you feel, you know, if you've played soccer, that you can translate over to American football and vice versa?
Oh, I think a soccer player going to American football is awesome. I mean, I know plenty of soccer players, U.S. soccer players, that have gone on to play American football and play it damn well because they've played, you know, with a ball on their feet all day.
Yeah.
So they're able to use that quick footwork, get in and out, their spatial awareness, and just, you know, kind of, you know, and they're also great kickers as well.
Always, but, yeah, they're always good kickers. And yeah, even
for the most part, I mean, soccer players just move so well, and they're always going to be like a skill position player.
Sure.
Yeah,
they're not going to be playing middle linebacker or anything like that.
Well, I mean, here's an example. You think of two awesome NFL wide receivers that grew up playing soccer. Chad Johnson.
Oh, yeah. And he still does play soccer, actually. I follow him a lot on social media. He actually had a trial with, was it
Kansas City?
Kansas City, that's right. Yeah. So, he's a big soccer fan.
And then you have Odell Beckham, who could have gone the route of playing soccer. And just with his skill set, he probably would be in the Premier League right now.
Yeah.
But those are two guys that you just, you know, I mean, it says so much about your footwork and your foot control and your foot speed that you can translate it into football. So,
and their route running ability is phenomenal. Like, I used to love watching Aljo Cinco run routes, and he can still, you know, he's had a few videos up on Instagram. I think he was going up as a cornerback. He's been going up against Antonio Brown and Landry from the Dolphins. And, you know, these guys have 10-something years on them, and he's still able to compete with them. He's never going to lose it. So
that's the other thing about a soccer player. The soccer players, they're running for 90 minutes or 45 minutes a half, you know, nonstop. So they're able to, you know, like you're talking about, getting in out of breaks and doing it fast and effectively with explosiveness. So,
and good soccer players are able to, you know, they've gone through their whole career with the ball at their feet and looking up at the same time. So they're not looking at the ground. I find that very beneficial for example, if you become a wide receiver after being a soccer player, you're able to get that quick feet to run your route correctly. And you're also keeping your head up and on a swivel because you've got to diagnose what coverage is in front of you and basically just not get your head taken off. So it's definitely translatable, some of the skills from soccer.
For sure. All your listeners, Gary Somerville knows football. Well, he knows football.
Well, you've made the show legit now. I have my first American guest on here, so this is it now. This is the big break I've been waiting on. We're going to make the big time now that we have Americans on the show. So, right, we'll stop talking about soccer, and we'll move on to your football, or foosball, or whatever you want to call it. So, you're a big Seahawks fan. You're born and raised in Seattle, and you have a season ticket. You go to the games with your dad and your brother, is it? You go to the games with?
Yep, my dad, my brother, and my brother's son. The four of us go to every single home game and root on for our Seahawks.
So what I love about this is you're not a bandwagon fan. When the Seahawks started to get good the last few years, you had a lot of bandwagon fans. They were the sexy team to support. I kind of equate them to the football version of the Golden State Warriors. A lot of people jumped on board that bandwagon when they started to get big. So I think I made a few jokes to you in the past about the wheels coming off the bandwagon. But I know you're a legit fan. So we'll talk a little bit about the Seahawks, because they have some interesting storylines around that team the last few weeks. So you're probably disappointed that Beast Mode didn't come back to your team, are you?
Hell yeah. I mean, come on, he's the Beast Mode. I mean, that's a running back that every NFL team would want.
True. Was there ever a chance of him coming back to Seattle, or he's only going to come out and go to his hometown, Oakland Raiders, for now, because they're only there for two more years?
You know, I honestly thought it was just all smoke and mirrors. I thought it was just something to kind of put Oakland in the press. But no, I don't think that there was ever a chance of him coming back. Because, I mean, after he, you know, threw up his cleats up on top of the, you know, the wire during halftime or whatever, the Super Bowl, and, you know, said done or retired or whatever it was. And then he had that interview, and he basically was like, I'm retired.
Yeah.
Like, I'm done. I'm retired. So I really thought it was a bunch of smoke and mirrors. But, you know, for him to actually go home and to his hometown and play for, you know, his team for potentially two more years before they moved to Vegas.
Yeah.
I think it's cool.
Good for him. Yeah.
And my dad was a Raiders fan growing up. But he transferred over to Seattle once he moved up here. But so I kind of like the Raiders as well. Would I love to see a Raiders Seahawks Super Bowl? Hell yeah, would.
Be a tough one for your dad, wouldn't it? Who's your dad? Like, no. He has no black and silver allegiance anymore. It's all gone, is it?
It's all gone. Those are like the Kenny Stabler days and back in the day. So back when
they were scumbags, ripping guys' helmets off after the whistle, was it?
Yeah, exactly. Now he bleeds blue now, so.
Fair enough. And I bet the Skittles company, who was it make Skittles? Mars or whatever it is. I'm sure they're delighted. Their sales are going to go through the roof now that Beast Mode is back.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
If he starts tasting the rainbow again on the sideline, their sales are going to skyrocket.
The funny thing is every time he scored a touchdown in Seattle, there was a cleanup crew, no joke, the cleanup crew with brooms that would go on the field in the end zone, and you could actually see it from wherever you were in the stands, that they would be sweeping up all these Skittles because people would just be chucking them on the field. So
that's fantastic.
So they're gonna need a cleanup crew in Oakland for him, so.
And normally it's cleaning up other stuff, which we won't get into now. So it's probably a little bit better that they're cleaning up Skittles.
Yep.
So you've played a bit of defensive back. You played safety. You played some cornerback as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure you know about the little rumors that have been leaking out about the potential trade of Richard Sherman. And, you know, as if the Pats don't need, like, as if they aren't good enough as it is, apparently the Pats were sniffing around a Richard Sherman, which would be, you know, if they lost Malcolm Butler, they'd team him up with Stephon Gilmore. That'd be a nice tandem at cornerback. Those rumors appear to be dead now. Is that it, dead in the water? Is Sherman staying with the Seahawks?
Yeah, you know, I think all along that's another smoke and mirrors thing. I mean, this one thing I think the Seahawks have is some honesty. And, you know, like they said, they'll listen to rumors for anything, probably.
Yeah.
If someone came along and said, we will give you the next 20 years of our first round draft picks for Russell Wilson, they might think about it.
Yeah, why not? You have to entertain an offer like that. Yeah, for sure.
Exactly. But he's too critical of a piece for the Seahawks defense to let go.
Yeah.
He's, you know, top five corner. Some say the top corner in the NFL football.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you know, it's a business, just like they all say. So he could be changing zip codes real quick, but I don't think that'll ever happen. He'll probably, you know, be like those older players, like Emmitt Smith, where he plays on a team for a really long time, and then maybe his last or 2 years, he goes to a different team. But he's going to be a 12, I think, for the rest of his career.
All right, I personally like Richard Sherman because he's a shit talker, and we both love shit talkers. We are actually both big shit talkers ourselves. But he's also a pretty smart guy. He has a master's out at Stanford as well as his bachelor degree. So, you know, he acts like a bit of a maggot on TV and stuff. But he's a smart dude. He knows what he's up to. He's not just a good football player. A little bit like myself. He talks shit and he's kind of smart. So.
I think you're beyond smart. Just you're dealing with cancer. You're going to be curing people, man.
Well, that's the dream. Right, so the rest of the secondary, I suppose, the Legion of Boom. So the Seahawks, interestingly enough, they drafted four defensive backs this year in the 2017 draft. They took Shaquille Griffin, who was a cornerback from Central Florida. They also took a couple of safeties. They took Delano Hill, who was a safety from Michigan. So he probably would have played a little bit beside Jabril Peppers. And they also took, which I love this name, by the way, they took Mike Tyson, who was a safety.
They certainly did.
They took Iron Mike in the sixth round from Cincinnati. So is this the Seahawks? Is this their contingency plan if the Legion of Boom starts to fizzle away? Because the two safeties, Earl Thomas and Wham Bam, thank you, ma'am, Can Chancellor. I mean, they're both coming off surgeries, so they're not getting any younger. And Sherman is being dangled, whether it's smoke and mirrors or not. Are they going to start letting these guys into the rotation a little bit, or is it just to provide a bit of depth for the Legion of Boom?
You know, when the Legion of Boom came around, there was some great leadership in front of them. They had Marcus Trufant, a DB,
yeah,
and a cornerback, pardon me. And they also had Lawyer Malloy. So those two guys, and there was probably a couple other DBs as well, but those two guys really helped bring the Legion of Boom, those guys along. So I would not be surprised, and I was just actually telling a buddy about this the other day, that those DBs, or those, yeah, the DBs that they brought in, Shaquille, Tedrick, Mike, and Delano,
yeah,
they could be the next Legion of Boom. I mean, you never know. That's the great thing about the draft is, you know, Mike Tyson in the, what, the sixth, seventh round or whatever it was, he's going to be knocking people. He could be knocking people out, right?
I want to see him literally punching wide receivers in the face with a name like Mike Tyson.
As long as he's not like biting people's ears off or fingers or toes, I think we're good.
Fair enough.
But those guys, I mean, the Seahawks do a great job of, you know, they always have, or not always, but they've past 6-7 years finding those guys in the later rounds. And, you know, the likes of Tedrick Thompson and Mike Tyson and, you know, Delano Hill, you know, he's a little earlier, but
yeah,
those are guys that, you know, that could definitely start and play for us in the next couple of years. But,
and I mean, they're good guys to sit behind and learn from. Like Sherman was a late draft pick. He was taken in like the fifth or sixth round or something, was he?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and he's made it work, and he's risen to the top of the defensive back tree. So, you know, these guys are coming in the later rounds, and they're looking at Sherman. They're like, "Well, this kid did it. He came in the later rounds. Nobody really expected much of him, and now he's getting top five money." So, definitely really good role models ahead of them.
Yeah, I mean, and then we also have some other backups as well. As you know, we have Deshaun Shedd. I mean, that guy was an undrafted guy,
yeah,
and he's, you know, he's our one of our starting corners. We have Jeremy Lane, who can, you know, play any of the positions really, and Kelsey McCray, who can come in and thump people just as much as, well, maybe not as much as Bam Bam, but he can lay the wood. So this is good. It's going to be an interesting draft class. I do really like the kid out of Michigan State though, Malik McDowell.
McDowell from Michigan State. So The Seahawks hadn't got their first round pick, so they have to wait to, where did they take him? They took him at pick 32, or pick 33, I think.
33. They traded again at 32 to go one more back to get one more pick. So,
yeah, so, you know, they lost, well, Cliff Avril's gone now, right? He's at the Oakland Raiders, isn't he?
Or is he still there? No, he's still 12. We still got him and Michael Bennett and some other young guys as well.
That's a pretty good, they were fifth last year. The Seahawks are fifth in overall defense, so if those guys can slot in and contribute, they could be climbing even higher than fifth this year. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, it's always a wild, wild, wild west out here with the Rams and the Cardinals, and 49ers have kind of gone downhill a little, but still some great football being played out here on the West Coast, but you just never know, right?
Yeah.
So.
And on the offensive side of the ball for the Seahawks, they signed Eddie Lacy from Green Bay, who was, a couple of years ago, he was a machine. He was killing everybody, but I think he had too many cheeseburgers. He's getting a little bit.
He was killing the buffet. That's what he was doing.
he was in that Wendy's drive-thru every other night, and he's. I think he's on the decline. I don't know how much they're going to get him, but they have that CJ Prosise they took out of Notre Dame in the third round. He seems to be a prospect for Seahawks at running back.
I love that guy. I really do believe if we had him going on without him getting injured, if he would have just had a, you know, full season, that guy would have torn it up. I mean, he's a threat out of the backfield.
Yeah.
And he can run the rock as well.
He can, yeah. He
was great. But I like Eddie Lacy. I mean, it's always good to have a big back in there that can, you know, get you that extra, amazing how hard it is for teams to get a half a yard for a first down. But, you know, that little extra added weight from behind the line of scrimmage there, you know, helps out a team. So,
and
you never know.
He could slot in an offensive line as well. He's probably big enough. If someone ever goes down, just get Eddie on and slot him in there, right guard or something like that.
They wouldn't even skip a beat either.
So has Wilson has had his own problems. He had a couple of injuries last year. It was clear he was not 100%. Do you reckon he has enough targets around him now to compete in the NFC? Or do they need to add one or two more pieces before they can go all the way?
Last year there was a lot of injury throughout the Seahawks and whatnot. You know, and having Tyler Lockett go down, but then you have the likes of Paul Richardson just stepping in and, you know, beasting guys with those amazing catches that he was doing.
Yeah.
No, they have, I think they have plenty of talent at receiver. And then they drafted, I'm not sure if I'm going to pronounce his name right, but the Amara Darba, Darba out of Michigan. The kid's a receiver.
Yeah, wide receiver, that's right. Yeah.
That kid is a blazer. So,
I think they do need that. The Seahawks need that deep kind of home run here, don't they? They haven't really been known for having a big stud wide receiver over the last few years. That Wilson, you know, if shit breaks down, you can just toss it up to this guy and he's going to make plays for him.
Yeah, well, that's our Jimmy Graham. Jimmy Graham's kind of filled that void. But
that's true. But he's not, the way this, he's not running a 40-yard dash in 4.4 seconds,
though,
is he?
No, he ain't. They're not built around the deep ball, though, even though they do throw it a lot.
Yeah.
They, you know, it's a lot of these, you know, quick hitters, you know, get the ball out of Russell Wilson's hand into Doug Baldwin's hand and let him make, you know, 4 or 5, you know, 10, 12 yards at a pop. And
And then
they do a good job of, you know, just staying on script and, you know, staying with the plays and doing their runs. And Russell does a good job, you know, evading a lot of the rush because he's been sacked so many times this past 2 years. But that's where they need to upgrade, is their offensive line.
Okay. So should they have run the ball in that Super Bowl 2 years ago? Or did they make the right decision pass and it was just a good play by Malcolm Butler?
If you're asking me, it was a great play by Malcolm Butler and it was a great play call as well. I think, didn't the Patriots score that same type of play in the Super Bowl this past year? I swear they did, to Julian Edelman. I think that's how he scored his touchdown.
Just a little. Those guys, they run really good pick plays. You know, you have Amendola there. You have, like, even Chris Hogan's more of an outside guy. But those two guys in the middle, they're the modern-day versions of Wes Welker. They run pick plays very well. You got a slant-flat combo or, you know, a little smash corner real combo or something like that. They're really good at pick plays, so very hard to defend against.
They eat it up. But at the end of the day, yes, we should have given it to Beast Mode to go right up the middle for 2 yards.
Ifs and buts. Their hindsight is a wonderful thing. So before we finish up, we'll talk a little bit about... So you are on the coaching panel. I guess I have to call you Coach Carter, don't you? Don't I?
You can. Hey, I'm just like Coach Carter, too.
I feel like I should be talking to Samuel L. Jackson if I'm going to be calling you Coach Carter. And
the path of the righteous, man.
An interesting tidbit is that was actually based in Richmond, but Richmond, California. So there's actually some creepy similarities between you and Samuel L. Jackson.
Yep.
Your both brothers from another mother. Both ballers. I'm actually wearing the socks you gave me. So you sent me over some pretty nice socks from the high school football team. Well, I was wearing them, but my dog came in about 10 minutes ago. She literally ripped them off my feet. So I'm not wearing them anymore. But yeah, so when did you get into coaching? And did you have to do any coaching badges? Or had you got them from years ago?
So... in the States, there's no really coaching badges. It's just basically making sure you're registered and, you know, you have a clean background.
Yeah.
Because you're coaching kids.
Absolutely.
And then you go through some just normal, like admin stuff, you know, again, just to make sure everything's clean and you are who you say you are.
Mm.
But I got into it a couple years before I moved to Ireland.
Yeah.
And coached at a high school, was coaching receivers there. And then when we moved back to the States from Ireland, I was just looking up some high school programs and got on with a coach and spent a year there and then took about 2-3 years off, had a birth of a baby girl and takes up a lot of time with family. So, but then last year I was able to get back into it and I'm the head coach of the freshman team at Redmond High School. And it's a blast, I'll tell you what.
So when does your season start? September or something like that?
Yep. Actually, we're going to start our spring practices here at the beginning of June, and that runs till the end of June, and we'll do a team camp at the very end of June.
Nice.
And then we'll have the month of July off, and then half of August, and then I believe it's like August 16th or 15th, we report for our first practice of fall ball. So
Well, best of luck. And has training and practice changed, you know, now that, you know, any football fan will know that the CTE and concussion issue has raised its ugly head. Has coaching of kids in football changed as a result of the findings that have come out of these studies? Or, you know, are drills kind of changed a little bit? Or are there drills that are now left out of football practice?
Definitely. It has changed, not drastically, but just to your point there of drills that you can and cannot do anymore. Mm. Just they don't want a lot of head drills, like straight on drills. But for the most part, if it's something old, it's just tweaked, kind of like what your point with John Kavanaugh. You know, you can just tweak a drill around and, you know, make it safer for the players.
Yeah.
But it's just one of those things where, you know, kids got to be more hydrated. Back in the day, you know, coaches would let, you know, that would be a motivational thing for at practice. You know, you ain't going to get water until you do this play right. Right.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't fly in today's society. So
no,
it shouldn't have flown back then, but you know, you just make sure our kids are hydrated and, for the most part, that's why we have our team doctors. Every high school has them.
Yeah.
Team athletic trainers, I should say. So they're always there, you know, making sure all the players are great or, you know, doing okay. And something happens, they're there to help them out. So
it's
different from when I grew up. So
absolutely. And at the end of the day, it is a contact sport, but I think introducing, you know, just differences in the coaching style, teaching kids heads up football a little bit more, adjusting how they make tackles and hits and stuff like that, it will never fully get rid of the risks of a head injury, but it will certainly limit the concussion risks when these kids are using the right technique and the right form when they're making plays, I think.
Oh yeah. And you know, with technology and everything that's coming out nowadays, I mean, the helmets are getting better compared to what they were, and you know, techniques and are always going to change. You know, someone may think this is the right way to tackle it this month, and next month it's a different way, and then the month after that it's back to the month previous to that. So it's always changing, it's evolving, just like any sport and anything in life, you know.
Mm.
Trying to make it better and safer. So
great. Well, I'll be tuning in to the Richmond Mustangs season this year. I'll be watching a bit of footage. If there's any footage online, I'll be checking it out. Hopefully I see some ballers at wide receiver making big plays. I know if you're coaching, there's probably going to be some ballers at the skill position, so I look forward to seeing some big plays being made.
We'll do. Just real quick recap there, it's Redmond High School, not Richmond.
My apologies, Redmond. So
I totally got
Coach Carter a bit wrong, because that was Richmond, California, so I made a balls of that.
But you got Coach Carter.
I got one bit right, at least.
I run my team just like Coach Carter. I make sure that they get good grades and that they hustle their butts off. So
love it. That's the most important. You got to have both. All right, Coach Carter. Really enjoyed having you on the show. Like I said, first yank on the show, so it's all legit now. Gonna make it big now that I have Americans on the show. Thanks very much for coming on. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thanks, G. I appreciate it all, man. And best of luck with this, Paddy.
Thank you.
Paddy Pitsking.
Right, that's it for this week's show. Thanks very much for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed it. Couple of shameless plugs if you are into social media. Check me out on Facebook. Paddy Pigskin is the page. If you're into Twitter, you can also follow me on Twitter at Paddy Pigskin. So tell your mates, tell your other half, tell your dog, tell your hairdresser, tell whoever you want. If you're not listening to this on iTunes, you can also subscribe to the podcast. So just go onto iTunes and search for Paddy Pigskin. Thanks very much for tuning in. Listen in next week where, as always, we will have less slant and more slantcha. Take care.